Back to the all-new Sports Cage. Text 306-936-6262. 620-CKRM.
Yeah, Saskatchewan, you can always text us in and maybe let us know what you're thinking about the NHL playoffs, because we're getting Farhan Lalji on the line here right away. So let's save the Vancouver talk, Maz, for when we get Farhan on the line again tonight. Tonight's a day that Barney's scared. I'm running scared in my own house because I need Dallas desperately to win in Vegas again.
I wanted, man, Vegas, if they wouldn't have been asleep for the first 38 minutes of that hockey game, I mean, they left Logan Thompson hung out to dry that game. Dallas comes back. Is it Wyatt Johnston? Two goals. He dominated that hockey game. Yeah. With 2-1, Golden Knights, and there's only two games on the schedule, so that'll be a 7:30 faceoff. Lightning and Panthers tonight at 5. And I think it's just a matter of time. I think that the Panthers can wrap this thing up tonight. They're back home on home ice. And it was nice. It was a nice comeback story for Sergachev. We see him come back from that broken leg after a couple of months. But I just think that Florida's too strong. They got so many. I didn't realize, here's me not paying attention, Oliver Ekman-Larsson plays for the Florida Panthers. I'm like, yeah, that's right, he does. And Kyle Okpozo from the Buffalo Sabres also playing for the Florida Panthers. And I know that. I know when it all went down, but then you realize, be like, wow, they kind of loaded up for their playoff run. And Vladimir Tarasenko also plays for the, hey, this just in, Maz, plays for the Florida Panthers.
Back, yeah, you know what? There are a few teams like that. I think there was people talking about Vegas that way, too. It's like, oh, yeah, they still have this guy, Alex Martinez, you know, who's been in the league, won Stanley Cups. But when you have you seen this Logan Thompson? We were talking about it, you know, hockey parents at a hockey tournament on the weekend. And I'm like, where did this guy come from? So we start pulling up his stats. Classic Kelly MacCrimmon. Classic Kelly MacCrimmon. He's a branded wheat king, kicks around Grand Prairie, then branded. Then he goes to like Brock University. And then he doesn't, I don't know if he plays the full year there, 24 games must have. Then he gets picked up and then he just gets this pro career going, like East Coast League, AHL, then East Coast League again. And then boom, all of a sudden he's with the Las Vegas Golden Knights and he's like standing on his head.
Well, and those are the kinds of things that, and that's probably the way you got to do it with goalies, because how often do you ever see a goalie get drafted real high, come out and blow away expectation and be good within the first couple of years? And then how many other take the Logan Thompson, Aiden Hill route, where it's this crazy roller coaster?
Yeah.
But that's the thing, because MacCrimmon probably, like I said, saw him as a kid and watched him and always thought, if I get my chance, if he gets his chance. I wonder when he went to Brock University, was it the uni 1 year starter pack to be like, we're going to enroll you in two classes, whatever the bare minimum is, so you can play sports, and then we're going to help you with the tutor, and then you're going to play a little bit, and then over there. But you got to root for guys like that. Those are the kind of guys that you love because they're grinders. That's a Saskatchewan grinder type situation.
Yeah, and well, he hails from. Where is it again? He's a Western.
Good old hockey.
I think he's Calgary.
Hockey DB.
Yeah, Calgary, Alberta. So, you know, good Western boy.
Because him and Aiden Hill, because when they had when the Stanley Cup was in Calgary last year, I saw them do a lot of events together just so they could get in more people than you could sort of on your own.
Yeah.
I think I saw something on social media. I think it was them that took the Stanley Cup to 7-Eleven and filled it with Slurpee.
It was White Cloud. It was White Cloud.
Was it White Cloud that did that? Because I got confused because I think when the Avalanche won, what was it the year before? Because I think I saw O'Connor, who's also from Calgary, they did something similar to that. I don't know. It was a convenience store somewhere. But anyways, you can't help but root for a guy like that.
All right.
And so tonight, well, I hope we bounce back. Is Farhan on the line?
Yeah,
now?
Yeah. Let's go out on the Western Pizza hotline. Always a great night for a Western Pizza wheel, especially if you're sprinkling on the postseason like I am. Okay, Farhan, we saved the Vancouver Canucks for you. Now I'm going full disclosure here.
Full disclosure.
I am embarrassed to say I'm respecting the Vancouver Canucks now. I didn't respect them going into this series, and I lost a ton of respect for the Nashville Predators.
Well, you're not alone when it comes to the Canucks because of how they finished the season, right? And look, this is like a first-year group. You can't really count what happened in the bubble. So these guys are a group of players that came out of nowhere, and at some point you're expecting the clock to strike midnight for Cinderella. So no offense taken. I'm not on the payroll. We're good. But as far as the Predators are concerned, yeah, I mean, they had that game. Like, you can't let that game slip away. It was there for the taking. They were clearly, by far, the better team for 57 minutes. And, like, I sent out a tweet that Canuck Nation just dunked on me for. Not that I care. But they were like, oh, how could you say that? Because I basically said with 3 minutes to go that unlike Game 2, because in Game 2 the Canucks trailed 3-1, and they were all over Nashville. Like it was ridiculous that they lost that game given how one-sided it was. And I said, unlike Game 2, the Canucks have no push. There is nothing here. They were outshot 10-1 in that third period until there was like 8.5 minutes to go. It was crazy. So you just thought, okay, these guys are content with a split. You can tell some guys are kind of wearing down a little bit and banged up, and they wound up pulling it out. But, you know, to your original point about not believing in this group coming in, like, I get it. They were really, really ordinary after the All-Star break, and some of their best players haven't been at their best. So it would certainly be a team. Like, if I'm Nashville and I'm looking up around the top of the West, and I say, who would I like to play? Oh, I'd like to play Vancouver. I think we can do that.
Absolutely. Right? And now they have, like, a goalie. I don't even know who their backup is. Maybe he's a guy from the Adult Safe Hockey League. Like, they're down to their third-string goalie, and it's like, what is going on here? Sorry, Maz. I know you had something to say.
Well, no, if you're Colton Sissons, how bad do you feel? Oh. You have an empty net and you hit the post, and then your team comes back and lose. And then when they started overtime, I'm like, I bet you this ends within 2 minutes. Now, Farhan, how does Rick Tocchet not win Coach of the Year? Taking that team from wherever he picked up like a season and a half ago to what he's done. Like, I swear, sometimes all coaching doesn't know. Coaching matters. Like, that team, it just, there's no quit. That's Rick Tocchet hockey from start to finish.
Well, look, Rick is going to be a slam dunk to win the Coach of the Year. I would be stunned, right? I mean, when you look at Thatcher Demko just got named a Vezina finalist. I think Quinn Hughes is the favorite to win the Norris Trophy, but I think Rick Tocchet is a slam dunk to win Coach of the Year. If he doesn't, there should be some sort of investigation because, again, you know, to Barney's point at the start, no one picked this team even to get to the playoffs, right? I mean, you would have had to have lived in Vancouver, not be in the media business, and just be a pure fan to have picked the Canucks to make the playoffs. I mean, they were going to be kind of that bubble team. So what he's done and how he's managed to get the most out of almost all of his key players, he's instilled a belief, he's instilled a system, and an expectation in these guys, right? Yeah. So I think they know there's a level of accountability that they've got to deal with that maybe they weren't dealing with before. There's a lot that Rick Tocchet has done right, and absolutely the front runner for Coach of the Year.
Okay, again, here we go. I'm full disclosure guy today. I was driving home from Estevan, so I was listening to the game. I didn't watch the game. I don't know if the ice was tilted or how you're kind of shedding some light on it, Farhan. But I got to tell you, I don't like being critical of play-by-play guys. But the Nashville feed, and they scored the second goal, and he was doing the play-by-play, and it was just like, oh, and in front of the net, and Besser scores, and I'm like, did he just say they scored? And I'm like, well, now things are real. And then my daughter's in the back, and she's like, well, they're only down one. And then the goalpost thing, he kind of glanced by that. Then I watched the highlights, and I'm like, oh, well, no, this ain't good. So, Farhan, the thing that I heard today, it's like an 8-hour flight from Vancouver to Nashville.
No. I mean, if those guys are flying direct, it's about 4 hours.
Okay, four hours.
I was going to say, it takes 8 hours to fly to Paris.
With multiple connections?
No, that's what I read. It's two ways. 8.5 there and back. Okay, so Vancouver's playing, and now they're trying to eliminate travel because they have some of the most grueling travel playing in Vancouver. That win last night, that is huge, you know, health wise, rest wise, if they can somehow pull this off again in Vancouver.
Yeah, it is critical because, you know, you can certainly make the case that Nashville has been the better team for big chunks of this series, right? They probably outplayed Vancouver for most of game one, and then Vancouver got two quick goals in the third period, and it wasn't one-sided like it was in the second half of game two and things like that. But, you know, you could make the case that it was even, or maybe Nashville was a little bit better. Vancouver comes out with the win. Now, the next game, Vancouver was clearly better. They lose the game. Nashville was clearly the better team yesterday, and they won the game, right? Like, so if you're Nashville, you probably feel good about how you're playing. You probably feel good about the fact that, hey, over these last two games, we've really been able to lean on Quinn Hughes. And yeah. He feels it, right? Like, in the third period, in the second period, he took a hit from two Predators. I think Sissons was one of them. I forget who the other one was, but he basically got sandwiched in between them, went to the bench, and had to deal with the trainer for a little bit. Like, he was feeling it, and he missed a shift, and had only played like 12 and a half minutes after two periods, which is really low for him. You know, like, if you look at Quinn Hughes' celebration on the game-tying goal, like, think about it. Game-tying goal with 8 seconds left. He's basically walking. He's, like, arms up. He had nothing left, right? So, you know, to your point, like, you don't want this guy playing extra games right now. Elias Pettersson has been really ordinary at best since the All-Star break. I'm told he's dealing with a couple of things. You want him playing less right now. So it's not even the travel. It's just more games and more beatings and more hits, you know, because if all of a sudden, I mean, you know the deal. Like, if Vancouver loses, you go into a hostile environment for game six, and then you got to come back maybe for a game seven with the other team having all the momentum. You don't want any of that. Like, you need to get this done now.
Well, on that Brock Besser tying goal, if Quinn Hughes keeps breaking ankles like he did on that at the blue line where nobody judged him, because as soon as I saw that, I'm like, uh-oh, this is not good. And then how Besser was able to score basically from below the goal line. And you could just tell. And once they scored that goal, I knew it. I'm like, there's no way. Unless Nashville gets a fluky goal, they're done. That when you get scored on with 6 seconds left to tie the game, I'm sorry, but that's the pin in the balloon. And hey, listen, and I'm not saying that we flip cars and start things on fire, but after yesterday's win, I was like, all right, the Canuck bandwagon slowly building momentum. Well, let's keep a fire extinguisher handy, but let's build some momentum here, because they could, and if they're smart and if they can do themselves a favor, you win this thing in five, and then you don't got to go back to Nashville, and you save all that juice.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, just to avoid that and to close the deal, like, you know, for this group, they're dealing with a lot of firsts, right? Like, last night was their first overtime, and again, I'm kind of wiping the whole bubble playoff clean, right? And even the Canucks have to a point. So first comeback, first bump, first overtime. Now this is your first closeout situation. Right? Can you get this done and get past this moment and play your best hockey, right? Knowing what's at stake, because you know that Nashville is going to throw everything. They're going to empty the tank. So Vancouver's got to find a way to match that. And if they can, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know that they should be favored by any stretch against Edmonton, but nonetheless, playing fewer games here, because you know Edmonton's winning game five. For the Canucks to be able to get this thing done earlier, it'll help them.
One more quick thing on the Canucks. I wanted to ask you, because you're there, you live there. Am I seeing this right on social media? After every Canucks win, are they like celebrating on certain streets, and like people are like, it looks really cool, don't get me wrong. Is that what's going on in the greater Vancouver area?
Well, there's this area called Scott Road, which is kind of between Surrey and Delta.
Okay.
And a very, very heavy Indo-Canadian community that's there. And massive support of the Vancouver Canucks. So they have this thing called Scott Road Sellies. So after a Canuck playoff win, you know, people gather down there, and there's people walking up and down the streets and jerseys and flags and cars honking horns, and it'll build as the playoffs go. They actually did it during COVID, like in the bubble playoffs, it was still a thing. And, you know, the Canucks are not allowing watch parties for home games. which is unfortunate. They had a watch party in Rogers Arena for the away games, but they're not allowing it for home games. But there's still a buzz down in Scott Road every game.
Okay, thanks for shedding light on that, because I was very confused. Okay,
Canucks fans, we can't have nice things. So Farhan, 180 degree shift, NFL draft, and it's littered with Canadians, not only through the draft and free agency. Just highlight some of the big names. The gentleman straight out of UBC, not only signing a free agent deal, but guaranteed money. That's almost unheard of for a Canadian coming straight from CIS Sports.
unheard of is the guy that also got drafted, right? So UBC had two linemen, Giovanni Manu, who got drafted in the fourth round by Detroit, and the Lions traded up to get him. They traded a third in next year's draft to go get him, and they were pretty excited. And I think this kid's got just a big-time future, like 6'7 and a half, 350 pounds, ran almost 5 flat in the 40. And there's just so much potential there. And then Theo Benedet, who probably, you know, would have had a chance if he'd come out last year to get into the NFL draft as well, was close to being drafted when it was over. There was about 7 to 10 teams that were all over him really quickly. He got a good bonus and signed with the Bears. You know, you've also got Isaiah Adams, who winds up going got drafted in the third round. You know, a couple of others got drafted a little bit later. Theo Johnson, the tight end from Windsor, Ontario, goes to the New York Giants. And then also Tanner McLaughlin in the sixth round goes to the Bengals. So, you know, and then there's four other guys that signed as undrafted free agents, which will, you know, dovetail into what happens tomorrow in the CFL draft, because the higher you go in the NFL, the lower you're going to go in the CFL, because the teams know it's unlikely we're ever going to see this guy. So curious to see how that plays out.
That's what I was going to ask you, is how does that parlay into tomorrow? Is there one or two that maybe went, or that sign that you thought, wow, man, I thought that guy was going to be, you know, CFL bound for the next couple of years?
Yeah, you know, in terms of the guys that got drafted, none of it surprises me. You know, Gio probably went a little higher than I thought, but, you know, the program there, and certainly his agent did a really good job of making sure he got promoted. I thought he might go in the fifth and sixth round, but to get up to the fourth, he's not going to be playing in the CFL. And I would be surprised if he even got drafted in the CFL draft. And Theo Benedet got a $100,000 signing bonus, so that will deflate his CFL value a little bit, right? You know, I still think he probably gets drafted late, because people know this guy's a good player that is going to get a long shelf life in the NFL. Like, the fact that they gave him that guarantee means he's pretty much a minimum practice roster guy for the entire season. So he'll probably go in the mid round somewhere, I would imagine. The one that interests me is a kid named Kyle Hergel from Ontario. And Kyle played at Boston College, and I thought he might get drafted. He didn't, so he signs as a priority free agent as well, but didn't get much of a bonus. So talking to teams at the combine, you know, I kind of thought he'd be that mid round guy, but now he might go like third, fourth, fifth in the CFL draft, because, you know, there's not a big investment that's been made in him. So he may be a guy that kind of elevates, right? And then there's an intriguing kid, a quarterback named Casey Bauman, who was raised in Washington, literally 5 minutes from the Canadian border, and played his college football and high school football in the U.S. And he got signed as a priority free agent by the Chargers. So Marcus Brady and Mark Trestman will be working with him. But he qualifies for the Canadian draft. And he was really late to the party in terms of getting his draft eligibility. But now that he's been signed, like, all of a sudden, CFL scouts might perk up a little bit and say, wait a minute, maybe we need to take a longer look at this, because he's got the resume that will eventually bring him back to Canada. And it would be smart business to draft him now and make sure you maintain him right, his rights for whenever that moment comes.
So what are you hearing? Because you got to feel bad for Nathan Rourke. Gets picked up by the Patriots last year, gets in the game, they re-sign him. And we knew that they were probably going to draft a quarterback. They take Drake May, but they end up drafting a second quarterback. And you know how hard it is when you're not the guy, or when the coaching staffs change, or there's managerial changes, and somebody new comes in. Is he even going to get a legitimate shot come training camp with the Patriots?
Probably not, right? And number one, it's the current staff that decided to pick up his tender as an exclusive rights free agent, right? So it was Elliott Wolf and Gerard Mayo that saw enough of him last year that made the decision to say, okay, we want him. And I would imagine that Bailey Zappi, who's still in the building, I would be surprised if he was there when training camp started. It wouldn't shock me at all if he winds up getting traded. And I think when Nathan signed that deal, and he didn't really have a choice but to sign it, since it was them that picked it up, they told him at the time, look, we're going to bring in a veteran, and we're going to likely draft a guy. So that wasn't a shock. You know, if the Patriots were smart, whether or not Nathan Rourke was part of their program or not, the Patriots should not have drafted a quarterback at third, let alone Drake May, who I have big questions about. That roster is not ready to handle a quarterback. You know, teams are kind of now building out their roster, then bringing in a quarterback, which makes more sense to me, because now the kid's got a greater chance to succeed with a better roster around him. So I think the Patriots are in trouble there. But that aside, you know, when they told him that, look, whoever we draft, we're going to make sure he watches the first year. So they bring in Jacoby Brissett, but I would be surprised if they took Drake May and made him a number three with Nathan Rourke as a number two. I just think they have to make May a number two just from a standpoint of reps in practice. So I think, you know, I do think Nathan will find a way to number three, but that still doesn't get him any closer to the field than he was a year ago, yeah. Even if he winds up dressing for a bunch of games and the Patriots are more likely to dress three. But so I don't like it. I think it sucks. I wish that he was in a different situation, and I hope he can find his way to a different situation.
Could you imagine if he decides to come back to the CFL, the record-breaking money that would be offered him? I'm sorry, but there's going to be some salary cap violation happening with one team, and they're going to be like giving him, trust me, the houses and the cars and all of that stuff potentially off the record. But if he decides to come back, is it as clear as day that he is BC property, or is he like just a free agent for whoever's got the biggest checkbook that could have a green tinge to it? And,
yeah, well, he's a free agent. He can sign with anybody. Now, you know, like I know Nathan pretty well, and we talk, you know, frequently. He still views himself like he still thinks, he pays attention to the CFL, and he still pays specific attention to the Lions. Like, he still views himself kind of that way, which is not to say that, you know, he's not going to go where the highest bidder is. But I also know Nathan's not that guy that necessarily is you know, looking for all the extra under the table stuff and this and that, right? And from a team perspective, like, the league's put itself in an interesting spot because they've allowed for this marketing money and they've allowed for it to not count against the cap. And I know, like, a Chad Kelly has a lot of marketing money and Brady Oliveira has a lot of marketing money, and it's all above board and it doesn't count against the cap. And, you know, you'd hope that they do legitimate work to actually get that money, but it's gray, right? So teams can be motivated and throw a bunch of money that way at a player, right? So, look, I don't think Nathan's coming back quickly because I do believe that he's going to try to play this out for another season. And then next season, teams can kind of clear the decks and kind of make that big pitch, and maybe he'll realize at that point. Because, look, for me, I want him to make it, right? I want him to play there. And, it's his dream. I believe he's good enough to play, and I hope the right situation happens. But last year didn't work out. Right now, as of this moment, it doesn't look like this year will, and through no reason of Nathan. But I do know that he wants to play it out as long as he can, and it'll take a bit more for him to truly realize you're getting shafted here, and this isn't going to work the way you want it to work. And then at that point, I think all nine teams, including Winnipeg, will do everything they can to make a pitch for this guy.
Yeah, he needs a legitimate shot and some runway. Like, a chance to play a few games, not like, okay, here's half a football, go in and see what you can do.
Yeah,
he needs to find. And I thought the Patriots last year, as a Patriots fan, was the perfect setup because they were hot garbage. Like, Bailey Zappi, Mac Jones was getting run out of town. I don't even think he was wearing cleats for some of the games. And I'm like, perfect, give him a shot, let him play. And then it didn't happen. Mind you, you know, Belichick was there. And he's just weird. He's like Scotty Bowman. Never wants to play young guys. But
it's timing, right? Because they also picked him up with 3 weeks to go. So
yeah.
it was a difficult time for them. You know, and even he was number two for the last game of the year. And going into that game, he was told he was going to get to play. And then, you know, it didn't work out. And, you know, for whatever reason, they didn't put him in. But, you know, which made no sense to me given the stakes. But, you know, no one's going to give Nathan a chance to play in-game immediately. What Nathan's got to do is he's got to get, like, last year, he chose to go to the place that had two things. One, they gave him a bonus, right? Like, they guaranteed his practice roster money, and it had the most stable coaching situation. Like, he didn't go to a volatile place. Like, let's say he would have gone to Arizona where Kyler Murray wasn't playing the first half of the season and everybody else there was hot garbage and, you know, Clayton Tune gets game time. Like, he didn't want to go into a disaster. He wanted to go into a place that was a little more stable. So I get why he did it. But this year, he needs to be at a place that is hot garbage. Like, he needs to be at the Raiders, where their quarterback room is trash.
Yeah. Right?
And just go in there, and maybe you get, you know, even if you don't get the bonus and things like that, like, I would love to see him take that approach this year. Now, again, it's all out of his control, because they had the right to sign him on the exclusive rights free agent deal, and they did. So, you know, can he find a way to get released or get traded now, not later? But, you know, you don't want this happening in September when everybody's making their final cuts and nobody's looking to add. Everybody's just looking to subtract. You don't want it at that time. You want it now so you can come in and potentially compete for a number two spot, right? So Tough. It's tough because those spots were there last year.
The way things are going in Atlanta, don't count out Atlanta for signing another quarterback and doing something stupid. Hey, Farhan, I know you're busy. You just landed there. Have a good one tomorrow, and we can't wait to catch up.
All right, looking forward to doing this weekly, guys. Take care.
Right on. Farhan Lalji from TSN. He is going to be riding with us every Monday as we go forward. Time for a break. It is the all-new Sports Cage on the home of sports in Saskatchewan, 620 CKRM.